Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Wednesday afternoon, a balmy October Wednesday afternoon, 10 minutes after 12. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We are in the Allstate Showcase studio. Terry Savage is it. Not only is she here, she's been chair dancing already. Terry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
I like being here on a balmy day with the market up, the Dow up 128 points. Some interestingly good news, surprisingly a little bit of good news.
Now, so I said the ADP jobs report. You said that's nothing.
You know, the jobs report showed that we're not adding as many jobs as hoped, but that's attributed to the fact that people are working, right? And then the service sector surprised everybody with a strong report and some uptick in factory orders, and everybody will be waiting for the unemployment numbers to come the first Friday of the month.
Oil reserves are down a little bit, which is good for the price of oil.
The price of oil is up a little bit. The economy, the IMF, who are they to tell us, but they issued a disappointing estimate of U.S. growth to be only about 1.2% maybe in the last half of the year. So we're not booming. That's not what I'm saying. But the numbers have come in, some of them surprisingly positive, leading to the thought that the Fed might raise rates. Of course, that tanked gold, which just plummeted below $1,300 an ounce and is trading, I would check it, about $1,273 an ounce right now. Down another five, $1,264. It was up a little today. So there's the Chinese are out of the market. It's a holiday. But the good news is that the economy seems to be okay.
Moving along.
Moving along. Slowly moving along, probably giving the Fed leeway at the end of the year, and we'll see again what happens.
Okay. So you pointed out this study or this report from S&P about ways one of the problems we have with this country, right, are big companies, Apple, and others who've got millions and millions of dollars overseas, hundreds of millions in Apple's case, and they don't want to bring it back because they don't want to pay the 35% corporate tax rate. S&P sort of has a plan. Explain it for me.
Exactly. And you'd expect a Democrat or a Republican to come up with a plan to so-called repatriate the cash. I mean, let's stop for a second. Everybody responds to incentives. So if you have incentives not to work because you get great benefits, you don't work. If you have incentives not to pay your taxes because you got some kind of a great tax deal, and we know who that was, you don't pay taxes. And if you're a corporation that earned money overseas and knows it could keep it there, possibly invest it there, or at least have it sitting there in cash to potentially use, you don't bring it back to the U.S., which has the highest tax rate at 35% plus state taxes, depending on where you're headquartered. But of all the people to come up with a plan, it's S&P Global Markets. You know, the Standard & Poor's that they're not a party to anything. They keep track of the indexes. They do research.
Which is maybe why it's a good idea, and it's coming from going to be shot political down by one side or the other. It's coming from outside that arena.
Exactly. They say, look, there's $2.5 trillion stashed overseas. The companies are hoping to get some kind of a tax break, and their idea is that you'd have a year to bring back all the money, all of it. But you'd have to take 15% of the money you bring back. You wouldn't pay any taxes on it. But you'd have to take 15% of that money and buy a special government bond for infrastructure. Nobody knows if you'd ever get repaid that from the U.S. government.
Right.
It presumably would pay some interest. And the government would then have to put it into jobs, infrastructure, which could create jobs. Now, the government creating jobs, it's always a little problematic.
Well, but
it would bring a lot of money back. And instead of paying it all out in dividends to shareholders or stock buybacks, the idea would be that they would buy these infrastructure bonds, which the government would not simply suck up. They would actually go out and build some bridges or reduce some roads and bridges and so forth. Like
so that. The money comes back to the U.S.
Yep.
At a rate of only 15%. Not 35%, so that's attractive to the businesses.
And it's not even a tax rate in a way.
Sure, but it's a loss.
Bonds for their balance sheet, but it would be 15% of the money would go in a way toward the government.
I guess that's true. They could recoup. They could conceivably recoup that money even.
Well, potentially, you know, if the government paid off its IOUs down the road. But it's an interesting concept. You have to, number one, believe that companies would act on this incentive. I think they would. It's better than leaving it stashed overseas because there aren't so many growth opportunities, primarily in Europe or Asia anyway. And number two, you'd have to believe that the government would not just put this down its traditional rat hole, but would actually keep it separate and, you know, build something.
Well, I have total and absolute faith in my federal government, Terry. I think that would absolutely happen.
That's why you're sitting in that chair. I'm writing opinion columns.
But, you know, it's such a win-win-win if it were
it
to
is.
Work because we need the infrastructure money. Studies say, right, for every dollar, it's worth $1.30 a few years down the road to the U.S. economy.
You know, exactly. What the chief economist in S&P Global Ratings, Beth Ann Bovino, whose name I have not heard, but I'm sure we'll hear it again, says it would pump like $190 billion. That 15% into the economy, and it assumes a multiplier effect of $1.30 for each dollar invested would be a lot of job creation.
What are the chances it's going to happen?
It makes so much sense that it probably won't happen, but it should. Everybody wins. Nobody has to say we kowtow to business. I mean, it's a perfect deal for everybody.
Yeah, I like it, and I like the timing of it because it will allow, you know, that whatever president's going to come in is going to come in presumably with a little goodwill, maybe less goodwill this time than I know, but less than this time than in past elections. But usually there is a bit of a rosy period, a chance to start to do something impactful. And if you've got outside groups endorsing something like this, this might be it.
There are a million ways the government could spend this windfall that it would collect 15% of $2.5 trillion. And there'll be a lot of attempts to use it to subsidize one thing or another. There's a lot of people who have good ideas in their minds about what the government should spend on next, whether we should subsidize student loans or health care premiums for Obamacare or whatever. But the fact is, this idea is predicated on that it actually turns into jobs, and that would be terrific.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that happens. So that's a plan today from S&P 500 or S&P. We don't have a lot of time, but let's do a minute on the fact Goldman Sachs was out with a report on Monday that says stock buybacks looks like they're going to be down significantly this year, maybe about $450 billion compared to $561 billion last year. I have very limited knowledge, but I kind of like that idea. That tells me they're investing maybe in their workers or R&D or in their infrastructure.
Well, if you're a big company and you make money, profits, which that's what all big companies are trying to do, there's basically three things you can do with it. You can pay dividends to your shareholders. You can use it to buy back stock. And that way, your earnings per share get boosted.
Your CEO salary gets boosted.
Well, because your CEOs and top officers are, you know, have options and other incentives that are tied to the price of the stock. Because presumably, that's good for all shareholders.
Sure.
A CEO is working for the shareholders. Want to see the price higher? You just buy back some stock. That increases the ratio of earnings per share because you have fewer shares. So that's the second thing. You pay dividends. You could buy back stock. Or you might look around and say, hey, this part of our business is really growing. Let's build a new plant, add some new equipment, add some employees or so forth. So what's happened lately is there's such little interest to be earned in anywhere else that companies are continuing to pay out dividends, increasing their dividend yield. That in itself is boosting the stocks as everybody runs around saying, what will pay me more than nothing in the bank?
Which is the natural way, the way it probably should be.
Well, that's one good thing to do. If you don't think that your business is worth investing in, if your business isn't worth investing in, you're not adding jobs and you're not growing the economy. So it's a triangle, and the right balance is what corporate CEOs are paid to do, corporate boards. But right now, everybody wants dividends, so they're paying them out.
That's Terry Savage, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, she's going to have you looking through your filo faxes for your old statements.
I am going to shock you. Because maybe your money's disappearing and you don't even know it.
Money. 1224, it is the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, Terry Savage is in the studio, and she has a column at terrysavage.com this week. You could also read it at Huffington Post about, well, I don't even, about S cheated. I don't even know how to explain it. But the idea is that if you've got maybe an investment account that you've done what people tell you to do, let it sit, let it grow. If you don't pay attention to it or change things around or contact the account holder in one way or another, it might be given away to the government?
This is a shocking story. It almost happened to me once, so I was familiar with it, and I got a frantic email from a reader whose name I use in the story is Eileen. She's really a Chicago woman who's been reading my stuff and watching me and listening to me. And she said, I worked for this company, a big Chicago company, all my life. I invested in the company's stock plan. I retired a number of years ago. She's in her late 80s. And every quarter I get a statement and the dividends get put in and I'm saving this money and I hope to give it to my children and grandchildren. And one day I open up my quarterly statement and the balance is zero.
Gone.
Zero, absolutely zero. Now, that account is held in trust by a transfer agent, it's called, for the company. And they say they sent her a letter, not registered mail, saying, you know what? We haven't heard from you in 5 years. Well, she didn't think she had to hear from them. She's filing away her statements. This actually happened to me many years ago. I had a mutual fund where I wasn't going to add any more to it, but I was reinvesting dividends, and I got the letter that said, we're about to escheat your account to the state. I called them up. I said, what are you talking about? You didn't get any statements back in the mail.
Right.
It's undeliverable. This woman had lived at the same address for many years. She was opening her statements. But if you have not given some affirmative action to
your account.
I
have a SEP IRA that I opened up maybe 25 years ago.
You need to check. If you're in a 401k plan, of course, your company knows you're there and they're contributing regularly on your behalf. But yes, you need to talk to the custodian of your IRA and change something. I, at the time, changed my street address from street. I said abbreviate it to ST, and that constituted an action, affirmative action on my part, that I had touched this account. So if you have an account at a mutual fund company, a stock transfer agent, a brokerage firm where you've been keeping track of your account. That's not to say you haven't been keeping track of your account, but you've just been opening and filing the statements for years. You need to get in touch with them. That's one reason, first of all, why you always open your statements. But number two, contact them. The toll-free number is on the quarterly statement you get, and call them up and say, I just want to reaffirm my dividend reinvestment instructions. Would you check? And by the way, would you put it in my record that I reconfirmed that I want dividends reinvested? Because if you're not, and different states, by the way, have different time lengths for different kinds of accounts. But in Illinois, it's 5 years. And although she'd been happily filing away her statements, all of a sudden the money was gone. Now, this was a crisis because I called the company. And they said, well, if we hadn't talked to this woman, it's a retiree, but we hadn't been in touch.
Right.
So we gave instructions to the transfer agent. The transfer agent said, there's nothing we can do. The money's gone. I called the state treasurer's office. They said, it must be in here somewhere. You picture that, the state treasurer's office in Illinois. Like, it doesn't have enough things to worry about besides many thousands of shares of this company's stock. Because I rattled the cage so much, they found it, fixed it, and sent the stock back. Because if the state, which it typically does, had sold the stock, then she would have lost something very valuable. Her cost basis was very low. If she dies owning the stock, which is a possibility, she didn't really need the money to live on, her heirs would get a step up in basis to the value of the stock on the date of her death. There wouldn't have been capital gains.
Okay, so this is rare, right?
No, it's not so rare. Let me give you two websites. First of all, at terrysavage.com, it's the top article. You can see it on the left-hand side. It's called Cheated or Escheated. Escheat meaning the law that allows abandoned property to turn over the state. If you think you might have cash, whatever it is, uncashed dividend check that got lost in the mail, unclaimed life insurance benefits, in Illinois, you go to iCash, the letter I, C-A-S-H, .illinoistreasurer.gov. But if you think you might have unclaimed property because you lived in Florida, Wisconsin, whatever, go to unclaimed.org. It's not so rare. States get millions upon millions of dollars in escheated property, and you don't want it to be yours. Open your statements, contact the transfer agent or the trustee of your account, and make sure you do that on a regular basis every year or two.
That's Terry Savage. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yes, absolutely. Enjoy your trip.
Thanks. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business in the studio comes by from time to time on Wednesdays when we can pull him out of What? I don't know. What do you do for fun?
I just play a lot of Words with Friends.
That's good. Yeah, but you do that while you're here, too, so that can't be what you do when you don't come in.
Is there a triple letter score available for my
cue? Do people still play that game?
I think so.
All right. I use one ATM in the whole wide world, and it's in my Walgreens.
I know. This is the most shocking story for me today as well, from a personal perspective.
So Chase, you know, is in all these Walgreens, and what, they've sold the ATM biz or something?
Yeah, so the Chase is selling all of its ATMs in Walgreens, so that will cut their coverage of ATMs in Chicago by 23%. They are the biggest bank in the area by deposits. They have almost 2,000 ATMs in the Chicago area, including Northwest Indiana, and 442 of those are in Walgreens stores, one that you use apparently, one that I use apparently. You know, they said that they started the deal because they had some spots that were not covered by branches, but then they bought Washington Mutual several years ago and integrated that, and now they don't really have the need anymore. But I was thinking, really, what this says about banking in general, my reaction to it, your reaction, a couple of friends texted me, you know. It really matters, the access to ATMs.
That's all that matters.
Right?
That's all that
matters. It's huge.
Yeah. I went into my Chase branch, which is about 300 feet from my Chase at Walgreens, to pick up some currency for my trip to buy some euros. Uh-huh. And I was in there this week, and I'm looking around. I'm like, you know, it was built back, it's not that old, but back when you had five or six teller stations, and now there's one teller working.
Right.
I mean, people don't go to banks unless it's something sort of extraordinary. They go to the ATM.
And, you know, I think also if your bank has a decent website and maybe a good payment app, but really the ATM that you don't have to pay the fees on is huge.
So now I'm sure then there will be much bigger fees at these Walgreens ATMs.
Well, unless you bank with whoever replaces
them. I don't, Frank. I bank with Chase.
What's that account number again?
Yeah, trust me, it's been hacked. So I still am not sure I understand the motivation behind it, because wouldn't Chase make money? I mean, people are going to move away from Chase, I think, if...
Well, it's a gamble for sure. I mean, they're making a calculated decision that they have enough branches now that it's not going to matter, because they're saying that their customers are using those ATMs less frequently because you can't do like all the things you can do at the fancy ones in the branches, like deposit the checks. And the spokesperson says you can find a Chase ATM, usually one that takes deposits, within 5 minutes of most of the ATMs we're selling. But 5 minutes is a long time.
It is. But that's exactly the point. It's the difference between getting it on your way into Walgreens or going through a drive-through at the bank or walking into the bank. I mean, the proximity isn't the point. It's the convenience of it.
And then you can check and see which candy bars are on sale.
Exactly.
Notionally, not that I've ever done.
I always like to go in and see how long the line is at Walgreens, even if I'm not buying anything. They must be making cash on this, and they're just making excuses about us using other things.
We'll see.
We've talked about this before on this program. This is this startup it's kind of for exclusive restaurants, right? And do you pay just for the right to get a reservation, or do you pay and then that money goes toward your bill?
Yeah, so the way Tock works is it's for high-end restaurants, and when you pay for a ticket to one of the restaurants, you're either paying for the entire prefix full meal, or you're paying, you know, some $10, $20 or whatever that is then applied to your meal or your experience if it's a high-end bar. And so they are competing at the high end with Open Table. They just raised $7.5 million from Origin Ventures and the Melman family, which, of course, owns Let Us Entertain You.
Right.
They're getting real big time now.
From the story written by John Pletz, less than a year old Tock has processed $104 million in prepaid restaurant bookings to date with a 0.64% no-show rate. And that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, you want to keep those tables filled. And if you're paying up front, it'll take something extraordinary for you to just ditch out on that.
Right. And if you do ditch out, you lose your cash.
You do.
That's the whole point of it. Has this been... I mean, they say they want to grow to, 500 restaurants or so?
Yeah, and they're at 165 already, and including some of the top names in the restaurant industry, Acadia and Elizabeth here, as well as, of course, Alinea and Next, and then Maud in Beverly Hills, Lazy Bear in San Francisco. So, if you want to have a drink at Aviary, try their new place next to Next at Royster, you buy the talk tickets, right?
I think it's probably the way we're headed. I mean, even if it's something smaller and it's a $10 deposit or something, I think it's probably where we're going.
Right, and I'm a Next season ticket holder. It's my favorite restaurant, and so I've been buying tickets online, prepaying since they opened.
Okay, back up a minute. You're a season ticket holder?
At Next, yeah. You prepay for the year's meals.
Really?
You get your reservation. And so this is kind of how this all started. And I've got to tell you, it's so convenient. I mean, so if you're going to go the high-end route and you know your dates, it's a hell of a lot more convenient for you as a customer. At least I feel that way.
Wow.
You know, and I'm not at high-end restaurants every night, but this is happens to be my favorite restaurant.
Monthly or how?
No, it's every year. It's
every
like,
year.
Yeah.
So you're buying one dinner a year.
Yeah. Well, they change the restaurant menu every 4 months. Or 3 or 4 months. So you're buying 3 or 4 meals a year, and you prepay
so
for the year.
So that's 3 or 4 times you didn't take me out to dinner at a nice restaurant.
Next time. Next year. There's next always year. Next year.
The next year is here, my friend, and it starts on Friday. Tell me quickly about Eric Lefkowski,
yes.
Who was a real successful guy, right? Groupon, Inner Workings, Echo Global.
Right. And he is in a new sprint to try to use big data to help cancer patients
this
and improve survivability and treatment. Yeah. So he's got a self-funded startup. His wife, Liz, who's a lovely person, used to run Printer's Row Book Fair back in the 90s.
Oh,
I knew her before I ever knew Eric. And she had breast cancer a couple years ago. Their experience with the medical industry was that, you know, cancer treatment was just not where it needs to be in terms of technology, and so he saw an opportunity to help and make some money probably too, but I think very entrepreneurial, his entrepreneurial side melded with his philanthropic side, and they're going to try to use big data so that if you go in with a cancer diagnosis, they can see your genetic pattern versus all of the genomes that they've uploaded into this database and say, okay, here's a specialized, personalized treatment for you that will increase your survivability
rate. So you can look at how other people with your sort of DNA background reacted to certain treatments.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it only makes perfect sense, doesn't it? And it's something that's it's so within our capabilities to do right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just nobody had done it yet. So the new company is called Tempus, and it's an end-to-end solution. They were going to, roll it out to various cancer treatment centers and hospitals. They're going to do gene sequencing tests and in a River North lab, and they're going to give the doctors software that allows them to compare each patient's genetic profile to the database and decide, okay, this is the drug that'll work best for this person.
Good for him. And I know he said he's willing to put up to $100 million of his own money in. I hope he makes that back 10, 15 times.
I do, too. And, yeah, he and Liz, they really do a lot of good stuff around the city. So.
Excellent. Frank Sennett, nice to see you. We'll check in again soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Good luck with that Words with Friends.
Have a great trip.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I got to make my mark and be an auctioneer.
12:52, it's the Business Lunch on 720. Steve Alexander, thanks very much for that. Well, let's stay in Wisconsin. We'll go to Walworth, Wisconsin, a Walworth company, Mecum Auctions, the world's largest car auction company. They're coming to Chicago with Mecum Chicago this week. In fact, I think starts tomorrow at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention. The CEO is Dave Majors, and he joins us on a phone line now. Dave, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right, so how is it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we're excited to be in Chicago. This is kind of like a home game for us. As you might know, we travel the country with our collector car auctions. And being from Walworth, the Lake Geneva area, a lot of us, including myself, live in Chicago. So we're pretty excited to be here and have our annual Chicago event.
The first auction for Mecum Auctions was in Rockford, right?
That's correct. That's correct. 1988.
All right. So tell me about the... Because a national company, you're moving around the country with these auctions, and yet you're from, pretty small town America. Tell me about that mix.
Yeah, Walworth, Wisconsin, I think has about 2,400 people. It's at the west end of Lake Geneva, Walworth, Fontana. A lot of people know the area because of the Abbey Resort, is probably a mile or so from our office.
Uh-huh.
But, we're a family company. Dana Mecum founded the company in 1988. His four sons, all in their 30s, work with us every day in the business, and Walworth and the community just seem like the right fit for us.
All right, so tell me about the Mecum Chicago, which starts. It starts tomorrow, not with a car auction, right? How does it kick off tomorrow?
Yeah, we will. We actually came here on Monday to get everything set up. The cars were and still being checked in yesterday and today. Starting tomorrow, we've got 1,000 collector cars here at the Schaumburg Convention Center. Mostly American muscle cars, but we have pre-war classics and exotics and hot rods and Corvettes and resto mods. Pretty much whatever your taste is, there's something here that might pique your interest. We will start tomorrow at 11:30. Doors open at 8. The auction starts at 11:30, and we always start every day with what we call road art. So it's antique neon signs and porcelain signs, road signs. It's kind of everything automotive that doesn't have wheels.
You're going to have to hold my hand a little bit here because I'm not a car guy. I'm certainly not a car collector.
If you're not, I can help you with that.
I bet you could. who are you people? No, who are these people who are coming and buying? Are these sort of collectors like you would collect art or whatever? Or are these people who are going to come out, you know, have always had their eye on one car or another to buy it and drive it around?
This is mostly collectors. Our clientele are people that, you know, either collect one car or, you know, we run into people that have hundreds of cars in their collections. And as I said, we have pretty much everything, so every collector can find something that fits into his or her particular collection.
So
I always, kind of on a funny note, I always say that if we took everybody away from our auction that was here looking for the car they had in high school or the car they wanted in high school and couldn't afford, there'd be nobody here.
Well, that leads me to two questions. So on one, you're appealing to a couple different audiences, aren't you? Because the people who can afford to buy and share and trade in these cars is probably pretty small. But the population who wants to look at them and ooh and ah at them is a lot bigger. You've got both those crowds coming to Schaumburg.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, for those that are buyers of cars, we'll have cars that will sell here in Schaumburg, kind of what I might call entry-level collector cars that might be in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. And then there'll be cars that'll be several hundred thousand and on up. So it's not only every fancy, it's every pocketbook as well that we can accommodate. But here in the next 3 days, we'll have probably somewhere around 20,000 people through the gate.
Wow.
And of the 20,000, maybe 1,000 to 1,500 of those are registered buyers and sellers. The rest of them are just people that are coming to see a great car show and see the spectacle and, you know, maybe ride the simulators and look at the new Dodges as one of our sponsors that's here. And then something I'm really excited about on Friday, I've been working with my friends at the Blackhawks, and we're having Blackhawks Day.
Nice.
At Mecum Auction. So
what does that mean?
Price to get in. Half price tickets to get in if you're just a spectator, half price bidder registration if you're coming to buy. The ice crew is going to be here. I think there are going to be some Blackhawks players. They've got some fun Blackhawks games to play. And the Chicago Blackhawks Bluesmobile is going to be here as well. And then they're going to have a VIP charity package that they're going to auction off as we start the day to benefit Blackhawks charities.
Nice. You can't go wrong with the Blackhawks. I want to go back to then one more thing about high school. You said people are there fantasizing about their high school car. I have a son who just graduated from high school last year. He's got no fantasy about any cars being produced today. So I just wonder, are there cars on the road or being made today that will be collector's items tomorrow?
Yeah, I think there's been a resurgence as a, you know, manufacturer industry. We, in the late 80s and most of the 90s, I think we were probably not producing cars that were going to be particularly collectible, with, you know, a few exceptions here and there.
So my Ford Pinto is not there?
Well, if you hang on to it for a couple of hundred years, you might get what you paid for it. But just recently, we've seen, particularly with Dodge, you know, the Dodge Vipers, the new Chargers, the Challengers, the new Hellcat they came out with, Chevy with their new restyled Camaro several years ago, Ford with the new Mustangs. We're seeing a lot of cars that are being produced today and even maybe in the last 5 years or so that are certainly going to be as collectible you know, 30 years from now as the cars that were, you know, manufactured and sold in the 60s and 70s.
Dave Majors, the CEO of Mecum Auctions, are at the Schaumburg Renaissance Center this week. Go out and see him. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGR.